From Schwartz Media, I'm Ange McCormack. This is 7am. After the voice to Parliament was rejected, attention has been on Canberra this week to ask, what's next? But for those who held out any hope our politicians had a plan to address Indigenous disadvantage, they were sorely mistaken. Today, contributor to the Saturday paper, Daniel James, on whether there's a path to treaty and what the debate will now look like in a new chapter of Indigenous affairs. It's Friday, October 20th. So, Daniel, Indigenous leaders called for a week of silence to mourn the voice after it failed, but, you know, as scheduling had it, Parliament was back on Monday and there wasn't silence there. How has the fallout of the voice been discussed in Canberra?
Well, I think if the Albanese government had their time again, they probably wouldn't have had Parliament this week. We're seeing all sorts of weird and wild machinations about, you know, why the voice didn't work, why it went down as resoundingly as it did. Melinda McCarthy has said that we could have done better, the Yes campaign, that is.
I think we could have been greater if we'd enabled First Nations people to have their voice to the Australian Parliament. And so what we have to do now is regroup, reset.
Peter Dutton, as we always knew he would, has backed away from his calls for a second referendum into constitutional recognition only.
We've always said, right back to John Howard, all of my predecessors, we've all had the same view, and that is that we should have constitutional recognition, but you can only do it when you're going to not be assured, but have, you know, pretty close to an assurance that you've got a bipartisan position and success at the constitutional referendum now.
There are calls now from the Greens for a Truth and Justice Commission.
It's clear that we need a process where First Nations people and everyone else are now able to come together to tell the stories about the history of this country and what it means for them.
And Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles has come out and said that it was the right result.
So did the Australian people get it right with this decision?
Oh, the Australian people always get it right.
But to say that that's the right result, I think, is a gross misreading of the nature of the debate and the end result itself.
The Australian people always get it right, and we absolutely accept this result. And
if you look at the official map from the AEC that goes down to the granular level of polling booths, blue marking no, orange marking yes, you'll see it is tinged with blue around the edges, but then in the black heart of Australia up through the north, you see all these orange spots at polling booths in remote and regional areas in the Northern Territory, Western Australia and Queensland, where there are a lot of First Nations dominated communities. The vote for yes was resounding. And so any sort of representations from the Conservative No side in terms of whether they had their finger on the pulse of those communities, well, the electoral map shows that they absolutely did not. But the biggest and most telling thing from this week is that neither side had a plan B. No one has any firm plans whatsoever in terms of moving forward from here.
And throughout our 7am series, you talked a lot about truth, and we know how important truth-telling is when it comes to Indigenous issues, but the referendum campaign was plagued by lies. How were truths and lies reflected on this week?
And I give a call to the Honourable Member for Warringah.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. To the Prime Minister, consumers are protected from commercial conduct and advertising that is misleading and deceptive.
Well, independent MP Zali Steggall has a Stop the Lies bill that she has been talking about for months, ever since she was re-elected to her seat at last year's election.
Will you support my bill or introduce legislation without delay to provide voter protections in political advertisings consistent with existing consumer protections?
And in response to Sally Steggall's bill, the Prime Minister expressed concern but failed to commit to any real action on this front.
Order. The challenge which we have of dealing with this, it's complex, You don't want to interfere with any freedom of expression.
Look, if we had that bill and there was some sort of semblance of truth in advertising, then the vast majority of the no ads would have to at least preface some of the material with, you know, the Aboriginal people you're hearing from in this advertisement don't represent the vast majority of Aboriginal people. It's something that we desperately, I mean, I personally think we desperately need in the lead up to the next election, because what we've seen throughout the referendum is that the conservative side of politics has tried Trumpian politics, trying to establish a different dimension for truth and for political advertising and for campaigning. If we don't have a bill like that in the lead up to the next election, and it's got to be more than just radio and television spending, it's got to apply to social media as well, then we are well on the path to Trumpian type of politics and a post-truth democracy as we've seen in the US.
Mm. And, you know, political advertising and lies in political advertising is one thing, but there were plenty of lies outside of the advertising context, right?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big lies was purporting to represent grassroots communities, saying that the vast majority of people in remote and regional communities in remote Australia, through the Northern Territory up to the top end, didn't support The Voice. And there, of course, wasn't enough curiosity from the press gallery as to check whether those claims were true. And as we've seen on Saturday night, and as the week has rolled on, those orange dots on the electoral map have shone brighter and brighter, showing that the remote communities of Northern Territory, Western Australia, Queensland, resoundingly wanted The Voice. So that was one lie that was told. But there were so many other lies told around things like the true history of this place, around intergenerational trauma, around the spend on Aboriginal dollars, which all went into an overall narrative which gave people on Saturday an easy out. If people were a soft yes, there was enough there within the no campaign to make them a soft no. If people were a soft no, they became a hard no. And, you know, the result speaks for itself.
And on Jacinta Price, she really became the leader of the no side to an extent, but she did agree that there are Indigenous issues to address. So, you know, I guess the floor is hers. She got the result she wanted. What's her plan, if not The Voice?
For the conservative side of politics, having now voted down The Voice, she has herself become The Voice. She's clearly going to be the person that the coalition listen to on matters like this.
I rise today to speak on the urgent need for Prime Minister Albanese and the Labor government to support the coalition's call for a royal commission into child sexual abuse in Indigenous communities.
This week she tabled a motion in the Senate to hold a commission into Indigenous child sexual abuse, but that was voted down.
I've never been so incredibly furious to have to sit through and listen to the speeches being made by members of this parliament as to why they are denying the voices of vulnerable children to be heard.
We've had a plethora of royal commissions, reports, coronial reports, coronial inquests. You can stack them as high as a skyscraper into things like child sexual abuse in remote communities. We don't need another one. From my perspective, it was just a point that she raised to sort of build her credentials within the parliament after the referendum. And, of course, she's used that to try and paint the Greens and some of the independent senators and, of course, the government as not being serious about addressing issues like that. And in the lead-up to the next election, it'll be interesting to see what happens to Jacinta Price's profile, because we have an opposition that is clearly not interested in Indigenous affairs. And so what that means for the Shadow Minister for Indigenous Australians remains to be seen.
After the break, is it possible to move towards a treaty now that The Voice has been defeated? The Every Moment Matters campaign provides accurate, evidence-based information and advice about alcohol, pregnancy, and breastfeeding. It has been created by the Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education and endorsed and funded by the Australian Government. Alcohol use during pregnancy can lead to fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or FASD, a lifelong disability. So make the moment you start trying the moment to stop drinking. Visit everymomentmatters.org.au to find out more.
With award-winning news coverage and reviews, the Saturday Paper is essential reading for everybody. For a limited time, subscribe to a year of our quality, independent journalism, and you'll receive the Saturday Paper's stainless steel coffee cup, made in collaboration with Fresco, for free. Subscribe from just $2.10 a week. Simply visit thesaturdaypaper.com.au/offer. The Saturday Paper. No hot takes.
Daniel, on Sunday when you joined us, we talked about the Uluru Statement from the Heart being dead, and many people this week are trying to grapple with another way forward for reconciliation now and are looking to treaty. Can you tell me where that effort is now?
Well, the idea of treaty was dangled in front of the Australian people throughout the course of the campaign by people on the Conservative No side and people on the Progressive No side as a way forward, as something that would be better and more meaningful than The Voice. Now, that's all fine and good. That's a very noble thing, and I'm personally someone who believes in treaty. But in terms of the work that needs to be done to get to a national treaty, there is a barren landscape when it comes to treaty. Treaty is a very, very difficult outcome to achieve. Otherwise, it would have happened by now. And so we're in a place where the leadership that took Australia and Indigenous people to a referendum are spent. They're exhausted. They're undertaking a week's silence. We don't know what their position will be after this. But at the moment, there is no leadership from within the Indigenous community to be able to create a movement that will get us to treaty. And so therefore, again, that sort of highlights the shallowness of some people within the campaign, people like Warren Mundine, who said that a treaty would start to be negotiated the day after the referendum went down. Well, I haven't seen much of Warren on that front. I haven't seen any sort of big movement towards treaty. We're seeing treaties in states like Victoria and Queensland. Let's just stick with Victoria, for instance, where members of the opposition here are now calling for the treaty to be scrapped. We're seeing that the opposition in Queensland already backpedaling on their commitment to the treaty process. So it's hard to see where a treaty process will come from. You need a number of things for a treaty process to happen. You need goodwill. In the light of Saturday's result, I would suggest that there's not a lot of goodwill going around at the moment. You need political will. But the Albanese government's not going to want to touch this with a barge pole. Certainly during this term of government, they are now in the fight of their lives to make sure that they get a second term, with cost of living pressures and a whole range of other issues that people that are affecting people.
They can't afford to go after something and lose it again.
Exactly. They've spent a tremendous amount of political capital here. Thankfully for them, it's not actually showing in the polls. But they can't afford to spend any more political capital on issues like this, issues that don't resonate with the vast majority of Australians, because the result on Saturday show that the vast majority of Australians don't care about these issues. And so there's no political will, there's no goodwill within the Australian community. And for it to happen, there will need to be a grassroots movement from First Nations people, tribal groups, language groups, clan groups, to come together and sit together and come up with a path towards treaty. Now, that's what The Voice possibly could have been.
It could have shown or given a sort of structure to how that negotiation would happen, right? Because you would have this body of elected officials who could do exactly that.
Exactly. A body of elected officials, as outlined in the Carmer-Langton report, which could have sat around at the table and, you know, basically put the meat on the bones of what a treaty process would actually look like. But we're now five steps behind that point.
And Daniel, as we head into the next chapter of Indigenous affairs, I wonder what you think the nature of the debate and discussion and action will be. you know, I was listening to Isabella Higgins this week on the ABC talk about this idea that The Voice is a line in the sand for how Indigenous leaders might negotiate in future, that, you know, the debate and language from them might not be so kind and friendly anymore. How do you see it?
Well, I think the Uluru Statement from the Heart was a generous offering. It was a peaceful offering. It was an offering that was there to strengthen Australia's democracy and strengthen Australia's understanding of the plight of First Nations people, but also the true history of this place.
This failing, this being rejected so categorically by all Australians, it will change the way Indigenous Australians want to interact with the rest of the country. It will change whether kindness is the best approach.
I think there's a lot of anger in what Isabella said. I think there's a lot of anger floating about the place, both through Indigenous communities, but also the communities of allies around the country as well.
Often in the community, it is well understood that black anger is not tolerated. And so we see leaders pull in their rage, pull in their sadness, and constantly use language of generosity, use graciousness to try and appeal to the Australian people. And after this, I think there will be a generation of leaders who have been burnt by this.
I think it's going to take a lot of time for the dust to settle on this, but I think the scars will run deep and run deep for a long time. People now walking the streets of Australia, and particularly regional Australia, will no longer see friendly faces in their mind. They won't see people that could potentially be an ally with some of these issues affecting Indigenous communities. Some of the highest populations in Victoria, for instance, some of those townships where there are large populations of First Nations people resoundingly voted against The Voice. So you've just got to wonder what it means for not only reconciliation, but for the social cohesion of some of these remote communities and regional communities.
Daniel, thanks so much for your time today.
Pleasure.
From the Saturday paper comes The Food, a free weekly newsletter featuring curated recipes from some of the country's leading chefs, including Andrew McConnell, Otama Carey, David Moyle, and Karen Martini. Cook what they cook by subscribing today at thesaturdaypaper.com.au/newsletters.
Also in the news today, more than 30 Australian aid groups have signed an open letter to Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, urging the Australian government to use its influence to seek an urgent ceasefire between Hamas and Israel. It comes as the Australian government has updated its travel guidance for Lebanon, telling Australians not to travel to the country as tensions escalate in the Middle East. And the Federal Liberal Party has failed in a last-ditch attempt at preventing the ACT from decriminalising small amounts of illegal drugs for personal use. WA Senator Michaelia Cash alleged that the change, which would see fines replace criminal charges in some instances, would lead to people from Sydney travelling to the ACT to do as many as 15 lines during trips to Canberra. 7am is a daily show from The Monthly and The Saturday Paper. It's produced by Kara Jensen-McKinnon, Zoltan Vecho, Shane Anderson, Yo Chung and Sam Loy. Our senior producer is Chris Dengate. Our technical producer is Atticus Basto. Our editor is Scott Mitchell. Sarah McVee is our head of audio. Eric Jensen is our editor-in-chief. Mixing by Andy Elston, Travis Evans and Atticus Basto. Our theme music is by Ned Beckley and Josh Hogan of Envelope Audio. I'm Ange McCormack. This is 7am. We'll be back next week.